This is Persona Grata, the official podcast of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'm your host, Tamar Schwartzbard. Persona Grata is a bi-monthly podcast which delves into the world of Israeli diplomacy and foreign affairs. Meet the diplomats, decision makers, and movers and shakers who are leading Israel's diplomacy efforts and shaping international affairs around the world on behalf of the Jewish state. This week, we'll hear from Emmanuel Nachshon, a veteran diplomat and spokesperson of the Israel MFA, who has emerged as one of Israel's leading diplomatic and governmental voices. I am very excited to welcome our first guest ever, Mr. Emmanuel Nachshon, the Israel MFA's official spokesperson. Mr. Nachshon, a veteran diplomat who has served in Venezuela, Ankara, and Berlin, is responsible for sharing Israel's diplomatic efforts with local and international media. Nachshon, who is known for his personable and direct approach, has emerged as one of Israel's leading diplomatic and governmental voices, both online and offline. But serving as Israel's spokesperson in an age where news travels faster than the speed of light has its own unique challenges and opportunities. Nachshon, who has been particularly successful at harnessing Twitter to communicate with millions of people around the world, will discuss his perspectives on diplomacy in the digital age. It's great to have you here, Emmanuel. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So before we delve into some of the major issues that are shaping the way in which we share Israel's message with the world, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in this position as a spokesperson of the Foreign Ministry for the last 4 years. I'm a career diplomat. I studied law at the Hebrew University, and I've been here at the Foreign Ministry for the last 26 years in different positions in Israel and abroad.
What influenced your decision to join the MFA?
Well, first of all, I wanted to do something which is useful for the state of Israel. I think that was the most important point. To represent the state of Israel and to fight on behalf of the state of Israel seemed to me, and still seems to me, the number one priority. It's a good occasion for me also to use the different languages that I know, to see the world, to meet interesting people. It has been an extremely interesting and challenging career, and I'm very happy.
What is your main responsibility as the spokesperson?
Well, my main responsibility is to be the voice of the foreign ministry in Israel and around the world. I think that's the most important thing. I'm in contact with the Israeli media, of course, here in Israel, with the foreign media posted in Israel, with the foreign media all over the world. I'm responsible also for giving instructions to our different spokespersons in the embassies that we have around the world. So it's a complex challenge, it's a complex job. And the main issue, of course, is to carry loudly and proudly the voice of Israel.
So there are a lot of different issues and topics that come up on a daily basis. How do you decide which topics to address and which topics to leave at the side?
Well, it's obvious that the most important topics are the political ones. And we have here in Israel so many burning and important issues. Just look around. You have Iran, you have Hezbollah, you have the situation in the Gaza Strip with Hamas. There are interesting and important internal developments. Every day, I would say that it changes literally every day. I cannot tell you in advance, or I cannot give you in advance a kind of a fixed agenda, because in our profession, in our business, things tend to change from day to day. We have important visits here in Israel. There are important diplomatic issues that we deal with here at the headquarters in Jerusalem and also in our embassies around the world. I would say that the political issues, and particularly the way those issues are reflected in the international public opinion, are certainly my top priority.
So there's been a very big hyper focus on Israel in the media for many years. This past year, there have been so many different issues that have nothing to do with Israel that have taken center focus in the media. Do you think this is a good thing for Israel or a bad thing for Israel?
Well, basically, I would say that it's a good thing. The fact that the attention of the world is directed to other issues, which are extremely important issues, is a good thing, because one has the feeling that the way Israel is dealt with is totally overblown. It's blown out of proportion. If I were to come, let's say, from a different planet, I would be sure that Israel is one of the biggest countries of the world and that what we are doing is important and has an influence over the whole world. And we know very well that it is not the case. So it's good to see that there is a better proportionality, that people understand that other issues such as the civil war in Syria, the situation between Russia and the United States, and other major issues are actually more important than what is happening here in Israel. On the other hand, I think that it is important to talk about us because Israel is, after all, an important and interesting country, but it has to be done in proportion.
Now, I want to move on to your Twitter activity because you've become very well known in this area. When did you realize that Twitter could be a valuable tool for your kind of work?
Well, I think that it's something that I understood, of course, in the last years. I didn't come from social media or from an environment of social media and Twitter. I was always in favor of more personal and direct communication because as a classical diplomat, this is what we do. We talk to people and we use, of course, the conventional media. When I entered my position as a spokesperson of the ministry, I started realizing that actually the rules of the game had been changed. And that being active on Twitter is probably more important than being active in other aspects of communication and media. And it changed my perspective. I think that it is really important. It has a major influence. On certain occasions, things that I've tweeted have become really major issues. And this has helped also in assisting the public diplomacy of the state of Israel. And I think that it's very useful. But one should remember always that it is an instrument and not an aim. Using social media, using Twitter, is useful as long as it serves a purpose. And here one has to be very cautious because people tend to fall in love with the instruments, whatever they are,
right.
Facebook, Snapchat, whatever. And this is, of course, a mistake, and you need to use them in a wise and smart way.
Can you give us some examples of tweets of yours that helped the state of Israel fulfill a specific aim?
Well, lately I've been quite busy with an issue related to false or distorted headlines, reports about Israel in on CNN, on BBC, and other important media organizations in which the headline actually did not reflect properly the facts, and it was often totally biased against Israel. And here, when you send a tweet and you react very strongly and very quickly, it is extremely helpful because it creates a kind of a campaign, it creates a climate in the public opinion which actually has a major influence over those media organizations. And here I think that Twitter as an instrument has proven itself to be extremely useful and very powerful.
You spoke about the personal touch of diplomacy and how it's really important to have a more personal touch between people. Is that something that's reflected in your tweets? Is your language more formal? Is it more easy for people to understand?
Well, I try not to be too formal because at the end of the day, you need to talk to a very wide public audience. And I think that they are a little bit tired of a formal language. People want something which is fresher, which is more direct, which is sometimes a little bit provocative. So I tend to adapt myself to those needs. I think I'm not trying to educate the public opinion by using a diplomatic language. On the contrary, I try to be approachable and to speak to people in a way in which it will be very clearly understood. Look at the President of the United States. Look at other people who use Twitter extensively. They tend to use a very simple language and to be very approachable.
So how do you draw the line as a diplomat between being politically correct, but also addressing controversial issues or topics about Israel?
Well, it's a complex issue because there is always this dilemma and this tendency as a spokesperson to keep as far away as possible from the events and not to make any mistake. And of course, if you don't want to make a mistake, just don't do anything.
Right.
That's the best advice that I can give, but it runs totally contrary to my work philosophy and to my attitude towards this profession. I think that we need to be involved. I perfectly understand that being involved means sometimes making mistakes, and I'm willing to pay the price. I think that if you want to be out there, if you want to have an influence, if you want to play a role and shape a public opinion and represent your country properly, then you need to be out there, even if it comes with a certain price. And it's a price that I don't mind paying.
In the past year, the Israel MFA has put a lot of resources into reaching Arabic-speaking populations and Farsi-speaking populations. What are some of the responses that you've seen?
That's right. One of our major priorities is indeed to invest in our social media in Arabic and in Farsi. We want to talk to our neighbors. We did not have the occasion to talk to our neighbors for decades because they were under brutal dictatorships and the social media instruments did not exist. So there was no possibility to have a real dialogue with normal people, with students, with housewives, just normal people across the border in the Arab world and also in Iran. Now this possibility exists and we use it to its fullest extent. We have an ongoing dialogue in all social media platforms, on Facebook, by Twitter, we send videos, we receive messages, and it's something which is absolutely extraordinary. This is, I would say, probably one of our more successful projects. It means that wherever you are in the Arab world, you can receive real and true information about Israel. We don't try to indoctrinate, we don't try to tell them what to think, we simply want them to know what is Israel and to show them that it is accessible to them.
What would you say is the most interesting project you've used to try to get to these populations?
Well, one of our more interesting projects is this medical project that we have at the moment. Actually, you can consult Israeli doctors by internet. You have a team of Israeli doctors, they speak Arabic, and they are available for consultation by internet, and it works, it's extraordinary. Of course, they are not meant to replace the doctor, the physician examining a person. On the other hand, it's a great way to get a second opinion. The level of medicine in Israel is extremely high, and this is well known all over the Middle East. And consequently, people are very keen and very interested in receiving such an opinion from Israel. Imagine the impact, not only on the medical aspect of it. It means that it gives Israel legitimacy. If you are not afraid, if you do not hesitate to contact an Israeli doctor in order to receive a second opinion, it means that Israel is becoming something normal in the way you look at the region.
What are the kind of messages that you receive from Arabic-speaking individuals or Farsi-speaking individuals?
Well, we receive tens of thousands of messages. Really? Some of them are positive, some of them are negative, of course. And the negative are not always pleasant. You know, I've been receiving, unfortunately, compliments, if I may say, regarding my family, my mother, my sisters, etc. And it's not really pleasant to receive that. On the other hand, I always say that a dialogue, even if it's of a negative nature, is always better than no dialogue at all. But most of the messages are extremely positive. People tell us, we are not your enemies. We want to be in contact with you. There is in certain countries, for instance, there is a big nostalgia for the Jewish communities which were expelled from those very countries in 1948 when the State of Israel was created. So you have here something very interesting and people are keen and curious to learn and to understand more about Israel.
So I want to talk a little bit about virality and fake news. In the age of fake news and with information being distributed at unprecedented rates, what are some of the steps that Israel is taking to combat fake news about what's going on in Israel?
Well, indeed, fake news is a phenomenon which is extremely worrisome to us and not only to us. It has always existed, but now it has become worse because the social media instruments actually enable you to overcome the platforms and filters of traditional media. Previously, in order to publish some piece of news, you would have to go through the journalist and the editor-in-chief, and it was a long process and people could check whether the information was accurate or not. Nowadays, you can publish whatever you want. And people do not always have the instrument and the capacity to understand what is true and what is false.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, you know, there are so many conspiracy theories also regarding Israel. I see them all over the place. And any person can write, you know, that Israel is responsible for this or responsible for that. But at the end of the day, people have to show maturity and they have to make their own selection as to what is real news and what is fake news. But indeed, we will see more and more fake news, and this is something that we are trying to combat as much as it is possible. Unfortunately, dead people killed in the Syrian conflict, right. And somehow people think that it is related to the Israeli-Palestinian situation. So we try to receive as much information as possible to make it public, to show and demonstrate the manipulations made by the other side. They are very good at manipulating public opinion, and we need to show exactly what is it that they are doing. That's one aspect of our work. The other aspect is also to explain the context, because sometimes when you see a photo, when you see a tweet or something, or a short post on Facebook, you have no idea of the context. You don't know why is it that this person has been wounded or has been killed, what is the kind of situation that we are confronting, and you need to explain it. And people today, nowadays, unfortunately, do not have much patience for lengthy explanations. Mm-hmm. So you need to explain it briefly and in a way which will be understandable to the public opinion at large.
There's been a shift from traditional diplomacy to diplomacy in the digital age. What are some of the ways that you're training your diplomats to be able to tackle digital challenges?
Well, that's one of the big challenges that we face here, because some of our diplomats, particularly people who are not so young, have not grown up with those instruments, and it doesn't come to them naturally. Some people are worried, they are afraid that they will make a mistake. They don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. I'll open a parenthesis and say that I don't mind looking stupid at all. I've been experimenting with Snapchat, and I have some photos with bunny ears and or dog ears and funny bitmojis. And I know, I mean, to me too, it doesn't come naturally. On the other hand, it's important to understand what are the instruments that people use all over the world. Don't forget that the young people of today are the decision makers of tomorrow.
And you have to connect with those people.
Of course. And if the decision makers of tomorrow have pictures, have photos with bunny ears, then you need to understand that too. And the big challenge is how to educate our diplomats, who tend to be extremely conservative, extremely cautious, how to tell them, look, do use those instruments, because otherwise you will be talking to no one. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be useful in your work, then you need to understand exactly how does it work. If I have to choose between an editorial in one of the classical newspapers or a successful post on Facebook, a successful tweet or a good video, I will always choose those instruments which are effective on social media,
really?
Because they will help me reach many more people than the conventional media.
Israel has never had it easy in the international arena, from the days of the Arab boycott to biased UN resolutions to outrageous conspiracy theories that we see all the time on social media. Do you think that being a spokesperson for Israel in this day and age is easier today or more challenging than the past?
Well, I would say with all modesty that it's probably much more challenging than in the past. Not because the situation is more complex. The situation, the political and the geostrategic situation, has always been extremely complex, and it will keep being so. It's simply that we see today a multiplicity of platforms and instruments that we never saw before. We see today a world in which everything has become much quicker. Mm-hmm. You need to react. You don't have hours. You don't have the luxury to consult and sit for hours and wait until you send some kind of a reaction. You need to be out there immediately. And it's becoming quicker and quicker. So you need, on the one hand, not to lose credibility. Mm-hmm. We are a serious organization. This is the Israeli Foreign Ministry. We cannot allow ourselves to write things or say things which are not precise. On the other hand, you need to do it very quickly. It means fundamentally that I have to work 24/7. Mm-hmm. I have to be available and sharp-minded 24 hours a day, because you never know when you will need to react, and those reactions are now in spans of minutes or seconds. We don't have the luxury to wait.
Otherwise, a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure, because otherwise you are not relevant. If you wait too long, then you are no longer relevant in the discussion. If you are not relevant, you don't have any influence. So obviously, it has a major influence over the way we work, and I think that it has transformed our work and made it even more challenging than it used to be.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. It was really interesting to hear your perspectives.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure.
Listeners can follow Emmanuel on Twitter at Emmanuel Nachshon. We will include a link in the description of this episode. Emmanuel Nachshon is just one of the many interesting individuals leading Israel's diplomacy efforts around the world. You'll get to hear from many more of these individuals in upcoming episodes of Persona Grata. We are always looking for inspiration, so if there are any individuals you would like to hear from or topics that you would like us to discuss, please feel free to shoot us an email at personagrata@israel.org. You can keep up to date with the Israel MFA's diplomatic work on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Telegram.